Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. This is episode 71. Your host today, Marty Jones, produced and edited by Owen Woods, and our guest today is Jerry Duran. Before I begin talking with Jerry, though, I just want to acknowledge Don Richmond for the music that you hear during the podcast, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds that you will hear as well. So our guest today, Jerry Duran, who's a very well-known mountain biker and bicycle builder and race director and so on from the western side of the valley. Jerry, thanks a lot for coming in to join us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. It's been quite a while since we have been together in person.
Well, I always remember you and your wife from helping volunteering to run the Riders del Norte Mountain Bikers.
So that's a good place to begin. Talk about the Riders del Norte, what that was and how you got that started.
Well, I'm actually an Alamosa native. My mom got married when I was 9, remarried, moved up to Denver, grew up in Denver. That's kind of a long winded, but it gets me to here. So
yeah.
So anyway, moved to Fort Collins when I got out of high school. When I was in Fort Collins, I ended up becoming a bicycle racer. You know, back then, cycling really wasn't a big part of the American conscience, but I saw the Coors Classic.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Vagabond, Bernardino, these guys. It blew my mind. Okay, then I became aware in this magazine about the Tour de France. I saw these guys ride their bikes like through the Alps and the Pyrenees. I had no idea. I was like, oh my God, these guys ride bikes through this stuff, you know? Well, I used to be an endurance runner in high school, and I thought, I want to be a bicycle rider. So I joined the citizen event, you know, not for like licensed races, but a bunch of citizens. There was like 100 guys in this race. My first race, I win. Well, I was hooked. Okay, so then I had a race career, and...
And you're talking road racing, right?
I started in road racing in 1984 and became a serious racer, worked my way up through the rankings to become a top road racer. And then in 1986, I could always climb. This person in Fort Collins, this company, offered me a sponsorship to become a mountain bike racer. So that was in 1986, and mountain biking was just kind of starting to take off at that point. And so, you know, I ended up becoming a mountain bike racer. Well, then in 1988, I blew out my back, pretty much ended my career. I was pretty devastated. I had a passion for bikes. So I can't race anymore. So all the best specialists, orthopedic surgeon, U.S. ski team, neurosurgeon, Denver Broncos are all like, Jerry, you need to retire. You're not going to be able to ride your bike 25 hours a week anymore. So I'm pretty devastated. I think I want to be a custom bicycle builder, and I'm going to move back to San Luis Valley. And so my grandparents lived over in the San Luis area, and I'd always spent time there growing up. And I went over there. My grandma had an extra house. I came down back to the valley, and I was looking around where I thought would be the coolest place to mountain bike, and Del Norte was it.
Oh, yeah.
I looked around. I saw the topography, and I just thought, this is the place, you know. I saw it had so much potential. So I decided to start my custom bicycle business in Del Norte. And then people heard that I was in Del Norte, and they knew I was into bicycles, and Del Norte's a little town. And they're like, Jerry, do you think that, you know, you could start an event here in Del Norte? We need some economic development. And I thought, yeah, you know, maybe we could have a mountain bike event here, and I could promote Del Norte, and I could promote my business. So it's a good thing. So, yeah, so we started the Riders Del Norte. I started that in 1991, and we had it for a few years. I'd get like 100 people or so, and there was a thing called the Colorado Off-Road Point Series back then, and it was the biggest big-time mountain bike race series in all of America. And it was all the big races like Fat Tire Bike Week, you know, the Iron Horse Bicycle Classic, the Breckenridge Fall Classic, all these big events. Well, we had our race in Del Norte for a few years, and I knew the guy who was the director of the Colorado Off-Road Points Series. And, you know, Del Norte was getting good vibes from the race community because we had great terrain and great courses. And
yeah, so, it was a great course.
You know, and so Greg Maroon approaches me. This guy, he lived in Gunnison. He said, Jerry, we want to put you on the Colorado Off-Road Points Series. Well, so I'll tell you a funny story about this. So he says, but, he says, we're entertaining this new sponsor, and he doesn't want Del Norte on the series because he says it's some little podunk town. And he wants, you know, places like Aspen and Telluride and stuff, you know, and you know, to have big name recognition because he's sponsoring our series. And he said, so would you be willing to come down to Breckenridge? And we're going to meet at the Breckenridge Brewery, and I'd like you to meet this guy, talk to him, because we want you. So I go down there to Breckenridge Brewery, and, you know, I don't really drink alcohol at that time at all. And these guys are having a few beers. I had one to be sociable. Anyway, this guy's adamant. He doesn't want Del Norte. He's like, you know, we want some real towns, you know, like destination resorts. You know, if I'm going to put my money into this event, you know, what's in Del Norte? We want places that are resorts where there's fancy dining and blah, 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 and big fancy lodges. And he didn't want us, you know. Well, the guys that were running the series, they wanted us because, you know, and so finally, one of the brothers, he's getting a little buzzed, and he says, look, I'm going to tell you right now, because, you know, the company was Sports Pep, and he says, I'm going to tell you right now. He said, we gave you the first shot. He said, this is our series. We're going to run it the way we want. If you don't want Del Norte on this series, he says, you can walk out the door right now. He said, because I got Jose Cuervo on the phone too, and maybe we'll just put them as sponsors of the Colorado Off-Road Point Series. At that point, the guy says, you know, okay, well, but I'm going to come to Del Norte, and I'm going to, you know, look at this event and see what we think about it. So I'm thinking, well, we're under the microscope, but hey, we're on the Colorado Off-Road Point Series. This is big time racing now. Yeah. The guy did come to Del Norte. At the end of that first year that he came to the event, he was like, Jared, you guys run a fantastic race. Del Norte is a great community. He said, this is so cool. You're like the one spot on the series, you know, that's kind of different than all the others, you know. And so that was pretty cool.
That is cool. You know? I did not know that.
Yeah, you know, and so let me kind of show you this. Because I got to admit, you know, at the time, and at this point, I brought in Eric Burt because I knew the race was going to get big. And I needed, he was a technical guy, you know, he knew computers, which isn't common back then. And I needed somebody who could really do like registration and timing and results, you know. And so I went to Eric. I knew him already from the bike world. And, you know, and so he came on board for like the last 7 years. We did it for 10 years. I did the first three, and then Eric came in and was my right-hand guy for like those 7 years. But, you know, I want to kind of, and at the time, I don't think we were just a couple guys having a good time doing our thing, you know. But in hindsight, you know, in a historical perspective, the Riders Del Norte was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all the best racers in America used to come to Del Norte to race. I mean, national champions, people that became, you know, Olympians, people that became world team riders, you know. One of them that I remember, I mean, I could go on and read all these names, you know, for people into bike riding, but, you know, I will tell you the story of one. One of them was Shawnee Van Lanningham. Okay. She lived in Pagosa Springs in Durango. She was a 5-time U.S. national champion of mountain biking. And then later on, she retired from her mountain biking career and she started doing Xterra triathlons.
Oh, yeah.
And in 2010, she was the world champion, female world champion of Xterra Triathlon. But the funny part is, and she even mentioned in the press during her career, her very first race as a beginner mountain biker was in Del Norte.
Was it?
And her whole career started in Del Norte, you know.
That's pretty cool.
But let me read this to you. Okay, so this is the boon, this is the heyday of mountain biking going on in the 90s. This is when 1996 was the first mountain bike Olympics. And so, you know, mountain biking is exploding and the sponsorships are coming because it's going to be in the Olympics in Atlanta in 1996. And so by like 1996, it wasn't Sports Pep anymore. All of a sudden, Bud Light came in and said, we're going to sponsor the Colorado Off-Road Point Series. Now we're talking like world-class sponsorship. You know, Bud Light, Cannondale Cup. So here's a poster. I just want to, let me read you the list of the towns that were on the Colorado Off-Road Point Series and see which town sticks out like a sore thumb. Okay, here we go. Bud Light, Cannondale Cup, Colorado Off-Road Point Series, $100,000 prizes in cash, Durango, Gunnison, Crested Butte, Aspen, Del Norte, Telluride, Steamboat Springs, Winter Park, Colorado Springs, and Breckenridge. And Del Norte's in there, okay?
So. Yeah, well, why wouldn't Del Norte be in there?
That's the one place that's not really a tourist destination, you know.
Well, but it's becoming more of a tourist destination now.
It is.
Much more so than it was back in the early 90s.
Well, I think the fact that it's on Highway 160 and, you know, it's just inevitable. You know, Colorado is basically a tourist destination anymore.
So, Jerry, you not only started and ran the Riders del Norte as a mountain bike race, but you were also the race director for a more recent series, the 12 Hours of Penitence up in Penitente Canyon. Tell us about that.
I was the race director of that. I've also was the race director of the Collegiate Conference Championships at Angel Fire, but we'll talk about that later. You know, some guys started a race, a 12-hour event in Penitente, and they ran it for a year. And then they weren't locals. And the one that was really behind it, this gal, she got involved with the guy, I think, and ended up moving away. And so, you know, but they didn't want the event to die. And so Eric Burt at Christie Mountain Sports kind of stepped up and basically figured out a deal to take over the permit for the 12 Hours of Penitente. And I was involved with coaching at Adams State at that point. And he asked me to come in and be the director, you know, pretty early on. At that point, I was like, I got a lot on my plate. You know, I'm traveling every weekend with the bike team in the fall because we do mountain biking in the fall and road biking in the spring. And I was like, I don't see myself having the time. But, you know, Eric's also a very busy man with Christie Mountain Sports. And so eventually, you know, he kept asking me if I'd take over and be the race director. And so yeah, I came on board and was running that for a couple of years.
Yeah, and that was a pretty fun event too.
It was. Yeah, it was a good event. You know, it was cool. It's definitely more of a special kind of niche kind of race when you're going to go out there and race for 12 hours. But, you know, Penitente is definitely a cool place. It had some things I wasn't totally in love with. It wasn't really connected to the town of Del Norte, let's say, because it was out there at Penitente, and that was one of the things that I thought was maybe missing. But yeah, it was definitely a cool event.
Yeah, maybe that was missing, but at the same time, that set it apart from other events.
Definitely, you know, and like I say, Penitente is an amazing place, and we have great trails there. I mean, that's one of the places in Del Norte that there's great trails, and we have a lot of great trails in Del Norte, to be honest.
Right. And speaking of trails, you've been involved in mountain bike trails around the Pass Creek Yurt, developing maps and trails and things of that sort. Can you tell us a little bit about the development of mountain biking trails in the valley?
I was involved with the Pass Creek Yurt, you know, up on the top of the pass up there. And then, well, I'll tell you, back in the 90s when I was running the Riders del Norte, I was riding around the stone quarry. I was like, this place is like Moab or something. This is big, giant boulders, slick rock. I thought it was so cool, you know. And I was using the lime kiln area as part of the race course. One of the things I've always said about del Norte is the diversity of the place. I used to joke and tell people, hey, you can ride in del Norte, you can be riding from Crested Butte to Moab all in one ride. And people look at me like, what? And I'm like, no, seriously. High alpine, aspen trees, you know, creek crossings, and next thing you know, you're in desert canyon lands, and it's the truth. So there's a lot of diversity there. And so that's one of the things I did do at the Riders del Norte that people loved. We had one race in the Limekiln down in the desert canyon lands. We had the other one up, you know, up Pinos Creek there at Elk Park up there in the high country, going across creeks and forests, you know, and, you know, people love that. And so anyway, at that point in time, I was working with the Forest Service, and I told them, you know, the Stone Quarry area, if we could ever build some trails here, I said, I think it'd be great. It's not that big. It'd be like, you know, great mountain bike park. It's right off Highway 160, great access. It's very unique, beautiful place. And they pretty much, I couldn't get any traction with my idea. They were like, it's not part of an existing management plan. And it never really, I couldn't get it to go. I tried to propose it twice. Well, 2012, I'm out there riding around. It's just one of those fortuitous things. I see this, I'm riding on this dirt road up above the Stone Quarry pit there, you know. Mm-hmm. And I see this guy, and he kind of weighs me down. You know, we start talking, and he's like, oh, do you ride around here? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, said, yeah, I saw some tracks out here. Just wondering, you know. And I was like, yeah. And so he tells me, well, I'm actually Sean Noonan with the BLM. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, who are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm Jerry Duran. I live here in Del Norte. He's like, wait, I know your name. You're that bike guy. You used to run. I was like, yeah. So then I give him the pitch. I'm like, look, this place is amazing. We're starting a team at the college. We need a place to train. I was like, and so he says, well, you know, it's a possibility. I said, well, Sean, let me take you out here and hike you around. So we make a appointment for the next few days later. He comes out with him and Clayton Davey of the BLM. And I take and hike these guys around for like a couple hours around the Stone Quarry area. And at the end of the hike, they're like, wow, we knew this place was here, but this place is amazing. We'd never been into it that intimately. We just didn't have no idea. They were like, and Sean says, you know, Jerry, if you're willing to come out here and, you know, this was in November of 2012. He says, if you're willing to come out here and, you know, try to figure out where the pathways are going to be and GPS these pathways for me and submit this proposal to me, I think we can get it done. It was amazing. I've never seen the government work that quick. I submitted those trails to Sean in before the end of the year of 2012, and we started building trails in May of 2013. So something that I'd been pitching for close to 20 years happened within like 6 months.
Wow, that's...
And so it was pretty
amazing.
That's
pretty incredible.
Yeah, so... And, you know, that kind of brings me to another thing that, you know, I've been mountain biking in Del Norte for since 89. I've ridden all over that place. And one of the things, you know, we've always had great biking, but as mountain biking got bigger and evolved, the thing that really kind of became the quintessential thing in mountain biking is single track trails. And especially when the ski industry got involved, when they started making like specifically designed mountain bike trails, everybody was talking, well, you got to have single track. And we just never really had much single track. We had great terrain, but not single track. Well, now, like in the last 12 years, I mean, you know, we've done the Stone Quarry. You know, they've improved the trails at Penitente. There's the town trails on the D Mountain outside of town that leads to the Pronghorn. You know, they have trails on Limekiln Peak. We have trails on Valley View. We've taken a lot of the old Jeep trails that were in the area, and they've closed them down to motorized vehicles and converted them into single track. And so the last 12 years have been a dream come true for me. It's just been a boon, you know, and I'm the lucky guy that benefits from it because I'm the guy that's out there riding them like 5 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, but it's also been a great thing for Del Norte. I mean, Del Norte really is, especially here in the Sales Valley, it's the Mecca for mountain biking. And these last dozen years, you know, through the efforts of a lot of people like the Volunteers for Outdoor Colorado, I think, you know, McDaniel over at SLV Go is part of it, you know, people like Sean and the BLM, these people, you know, they put a focused effort into developing trails, and it's been amazing.
Yeah, and now lots of folks are showing up to ride those trails.
Absolutely. I mean, every time I go into town and I look over at the Three Barrel or something or the restaurants, you know, I see bunch of vehicles with bikes on the back, you know, and you know they're in town to ride.
Right. And when you just go to a parking area close to one of the trails, it's pretty unusual for your vehicle to be the only one there.
Yeah. And, you know, literally, I mean, like I said, we have trails on the on Lookout Mountain, the D Mountain there. You can literally be on the trails in 2 minutes from town now and hook into the Pronghorn system, which is, you know, a big, nice mountain bike place.
So yeah.
It's right there.
Right. Excellent.
You know.
So, Jerry, you know, when you first started talking about your experiences and the physical limitations that caused you to no longer be a racer, you mentioned that you pivoted to building custom bikes. I wonder if you can talk about that for us.
Okay, so it's 1988. My back's ruined. I think I want to move to the San Luisville. I don't want to live in Fort Collins forever. I had a passion for bikes. I'm like, I want to be a custom bicycle builder. I want my own company. Well, wanting to make bikes and knowing how to make bikes are two different things. I mean, it's highly technical, you know. You got to have the right geometries. It's an exact thing. You have your bikes off by 1 millimeter. They're going downhill at 50 miles an hour. It starts to wobble. You got to weld them correctly, blah, blah, blah. So I thought I need somebody to maybe give me a hand up here. There was a few bike builders up in northern Colorado. I went to like two of them, tried to get them to take me on as apprentice. They laughed me out the door. They're like, seriously, dude, you think that we're going to show you our trade secrets and then you're going to open up shop and be competition for us? You know, I was like, well, I'm going to move down to Southern Colorado. They're like, no, no. I was feeling a little humiliated, to be honest, but I had a burning desire. I was like, I'm going to do this. So I lucked out. I went to Boulder. I meet this guy, Leonard Zinn, who had a shop there. He ends up being probably one of the most famous technical editors in the world eventually. But anyway, he had a shop there. Small-time shop, he's making bikes. I go into Leonard. I'm like, Leonard, please take me on as an apprentice. I want to be a bike frame builder. I am going to do this. He's like, nah, Jerry, I run a small place. I really don't have room. I said, you know, I'm getting a little frustrated. I said, I'm going to do this. I am going to do this, whether somebody helps me along or not. I said, I'll tell you what, Leonard, I'll give you $1,000. You let me come in here, work with you for like a month or two. I'm going to move down to San Luis Valley. I'm going to start my own business making bikes. I said, I need somebody to give me a hand up. He looks at me and he says, you know, it seems like nothing's going to stop you. He said, I guess if somebody's going to help you, it might as well be me. So I end up getting an apprenticeship with Leonard Zinn. Well, he ends up becoming the technical editor for Valley News magazine for like 20 years, you know. So he gave me all his formulas. He's like 6'5", you know. He's famous around the world for making bikes for large people. And, you know, and so then, of course, I got a following of people that, you know. And over the years, I mean, I made bikes for probably at least 20 people here in the Valley. And, you know, one of them being Brian Stevenson, you know, the voice of high school sports here. Well, he's a big dude.
He is big.
You know, Lynn McCullough, the farmer, you know, he's a big dude.
He is, too.
And these guys all heard, like, oh, well, you learned how to make bikes with Leonard Zinn. I want one of your bikes. You know, and there was other people in the Valley, definitely, like at least 20. Then, you know, of course, along the way, I made bikes for a lot of people. And, you know, it was very gratifying to be a part of their lives. But, you know, I also made bikes for, like, you know, Taos author John Nichols and, you know, Hollywood legend Robert Redford. And
what kind of bikes were you building for these folks?
Well, I made mountain bikes. I made road bikes. I made time trial bikes. They were custom fit. I would specifically measure people, specific bones in their bodies. I would say, how much do you weigh? I would select the materials depending on that. I'd say, you know, what do you want to use this bike for? Is this going to be a race bike? Is it going to be a touring bike? You want a utilitarian bike? You know, I would alter the geometry depending on what they wanted to do with the bike. I would select materials depending on what they wanted to do, how much they weighed, how long the tubes were, that kind of thing. And, you know, I was a comprehensive builder. And then one of the things I think I really started to get famous for is the painting I used to do. You know, painting bikes is a relatively small surface, but I got into painting very intricate like Native American designs. I used to spend hours looking at like Navajo weavings on rugs and stuff, and I'd pick out a particular design and I'd repeat it on bike frames. And I got a lot of recognition for that, even in some of the national bike mags and stuff.
Well, you designed the t-shirts for Riders del Norte, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we still have our t-shirts from when we came to do race marshalling 1 year. And it's a really cool design for a t-shirt, so I can understand why people would want your bikes, not just for the quality of the bike, but for the finish as well.
Definitely there's the engineering part of making bikes, but I think that one of the things that captivated my imagination back then was the artistic part of it, too. I love to paint.
So tell us about the bike that you built for John Nichols, and you got to know John, so tell us a little bit about him, too.
I do want to talk about John, because he's an amazing person. You know, he passed away a couple years ago, and I miss him dearly, but, you know, he was special, and some of the messages that he was sending out, I want to talk about this, you know, and because part of it, if you're talking about, well, the outdoor citizen, right, okay. John was a big, I mean, sure, he wrote fiction, but he wrote 23 books that were published. Seven of them were like environmental essays or environmental photo journals, I guess is what you'd call them, you know, and I'd like to talk about that a bit. So I'd read, when I was living in Fort Collins, I'd read the Milagro Bee in Field War. Okay, then in 1987, he did a reading at Colorado State University, and it blew my mind. He just published two books. One was On the Mesa, and the other was American Blood. Well, On the Mesa was this book about, you know, how that time of year, So anyway, he's doing this reading, and he's reading out of On the Mesa, and it's all about, you know, oh, no, it was The Last Beautiful Days of Autumn. My mistake. It was actually The Last Beautiful Days of Autumn that had been published and American Blood. So he's reading about, out of The Last Beautiful Days of Autumn, about how this is the magical time of year that captivates his soul and, you know, talking all nature and all this. And I'm like, wow, this guy's like kind of Henry David Thoreau kind of thing. Next minute, he starts reading out of this book called American Blood. It's graphic violence. It was like a story about the atrocities of war, particularly the Vietnam War. So he's going back and forth between these two books, and he's reading like this nature stuff, butterflies, blah, 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 the aspen trees are turning, blah, blah, blah. Next minute, he's like, oh, yeah, they're shooting Viet Cong kids, and there's this psychopathic killer, you know, in this book that's, you know, a U.S. soldier, and he's basically a psychopath, but now he's a soldier, so he's got license to kill, and it's graphic gore. And it blew my mind. I'm like, who is this guy? You know, I was like, this guy's like Henry David Thoreau and Kurt Vonnegut all wrapped into one or something, you know? So it left an impression on me. So anyway, you've probably been around long enough to remember, 1991, AWDI.
Oh, yeah.
American Water Development Incorporated, that Canadian billionaire wants to come down and pump out the aquifer here in the valley, ship that water up to Denver. Well, I think they were doing an unveiling of this traveling mural depicting life here in the valley, you know, that they could take like the state fair and all that. Well, John Nichols came to Adams State to give a presentation and a lecture and a slideshow here at Adams State. Well, I already seen him, and so I came to this. Well, during the slideshow, you know, he was saying, hey, look, if you really want to save your water, people, you better start saving your water. This battle's not going away. He's like, start conserving your water. You know, quit watering your lawn in the middle of the day. Quit washing your car every week. You know, if you're a guy and you have privacy, go outside in your yard and pee. Don't flush the toilet every time. You know, he's saying, look, this is not going away. You got to save your water. You know, which to this day, it's still true. The Colorado River's drying up. The Rio Grande River's drying up. I mean, you know, water. I still worry about this. One day, they're going to come down here, the senators from Denver, and say, hey, look, we need water on the Front Range. So this is, you know, I worry about this message. But nonetheless, during his slideshow, he's got a bike in there, and he's showing him on a bike. And I'm thinking, I want this guy on a bike. So as the show starts to come to an end, I start working my way up towards the stage. I'm like, I'm going to talk to this dude. So the minute he steps off the stage, I'm like the first person there. And I'm like, hey, John, I'm Jerry Duran. I'm a custom bicycle builder down here. I hear you like bikes. I'd like you to have a bike. Well, before he could get a word in, here come all the newspaper reporters. So he gets bombed by all these reporters. They start asking him questions. And I'm just standing there. And I'm thinking, I'm not going away. I want to talk to this guy. So I just stand there for several minutes. Finally, he looks over me and said, hey, what'd you say your name was again? And all these reporters there. And I said, oh, I'm Jerry Duran. He pulls out a business card. He writes, he says, here, look, this is my home phone number. Do not give it to anybody. Call me when I have a little bit more time and we'll talk. I call him up on the phone. He's like, you know, Jerry, custom bike, not my trip. He said, I buy secondhand clothes. I ride this junker bike. I have an old truck. He says, custom bike, I'm a non-consumer. This isn't my trip. And I'm like, John, don't make a decision over the phone. I was like, look, this will make your life better. I see this bike in your picture. It's a junker. I was like, let me come down to Taos and talk to you. At least let me show you some pictures of my work. You know, I want you to have one of my bikes. I said, I'll buy you lunch. He says, well, if you want to come down to Taos and buy me lunch, sure. So we make an appointment. He says, meet me at Dory's Cafe. He shows up on this junker bike. So again, he's just reluctant. He's like, look, this is going to ruin my reputation, Jerry. He says, you know, like I said, I'm a non-consumer. This is the thing that's wrong with America. America is like 5% of the world population, and we're consuming 30% of the world's resources. And I buy my clothes secondhand. This bike I bought for $100 at the secondhand store. I drive this 20-year-old pickup, you know. He said, and then you want me to start riding this custom bike around town? You know, people are going to say, well, John Nichols, you're a hypocrite, you know. And I'm like, but John, you know, you say you ride your bike every day running errands around town. I was like, this bike will make life easier. I said, you could get twice as many things done. He says, well, I don't want to get twice as many things done. You know, he says, I used to be that way. He said, but I'm trying to simplify my life. He said, I used to have a list of 20 things to do. He said, now I'm trying to get down to 10. He said, you know, because I realize that half the stuff I do is crap anyway. You know, he said, so I don't really want to make, you know. And so at this point, I'm like, you know what? This guy doesn't want one of my bikes. Forget it. So I just quit trying to pitch him. And so we're having lunch, and we start talking about what he does. And, you know, he started just asking me more personal things about what I was into. And we forget about the bike stuff. And I'm thinking, well, no bike, yeah. You know. Well, waitress drops off the check. And he looks at me and he says, so tell me, Jerry, how much is this bike going to cost me? And so they said, and I'm like, oh. He says, but I'm telling you now, I don't want any of this fancy race stuff that you're making and stuff. He says, I want a utilitarian bike. He says, I want baskets on the front and back. I want a big, fancy, fat, comfortable seat. I want fenders. You know, I want a kickstand. I want a horn. He says, none of this high-class thoroughbred stuff. I want a utilitarian bike. I said, no problem, John. Let's do it. So, you know, it's kind of funny. So I take the bike down to him in Taos. And
how long did it take you to build this bike?
Oh, I don't remember. I think I got to him like a month later or something, you know. And so I take it down to him, and he's giving me dirty looks, you know. And I show up with this bike, and he's still like, he's reluctant. I mean, I could tell. He's giving you a dirty look, like, look what you got me into, you know. And he kind of says, you know, you're going to ruin my reputation, dude. He's like, this bike is worth more than my truck that I drive. And I looked at him, and I still remember he started laughing. I looked at him, I said, well, yeah, John. I was like, you know, that's the true definition of a bike bum. When your bike is worth more than your vehicle, you're a true bike bum, you know. And then he starts laughing, you know. But so anyway, that was kind of the start of a long, long, beautiful friendship, you know, over the years. I mean, I hiked Wheeler Peak with him. You know, he's a big time fisherman. We used to hike down into the Rio Grande Gorge. He had this stock pond on the mesa that, if you know any of his books, you know, he was fascinated by this glorified mud puddle, basically. You know, he would take pictures of it over and over. It's in a lot of books. And, you know, he used to tell me, you know, Jerry, there's a whole universe in this pond. You know, and he'd say, you know, when the sun comes to a certain direction, this certain bug comes out. If this bug comes out, then this bird eats it. If this bird eats that, then it poops over here, and then this flower will come out. And then, you know, if the wind comes up, this certain toad comes out. And if this certain toad comes out, this lizard comes out. And I mean, he was a naturist. You know, his father was a naturist. And he'd go on and on. He'd spend endless hours sitting out there at this stock pond, you know, and I'd spend time with him out there. And, you know, so it was a good time. And, you know, John, he's amazing. Some of the messages that he had were amazing. He was a brilliant person, you know, a zany character. If you've ever read any of his books, there's always this kind of zany humor with this kind of underlying sadness. And I think that was a big part of John, too, is I think, you know, he knew so much that a lot of the times I think he carried the weight of the world on his shoulders, you know. And a lot of times I'd hang out with him and I'd feel devastated afterwards because it was like an emotional roller coaster ride, you know, because he'd start talking world politics and problems with the environment. And, you know, at the same time, he'd take me on these nature walks where I'd be like, half the time I'd like, he'd go on these rants about politics and world economics and stuff that he was just flying over my head. I'd be like, I don't even know what the heck this guy's talking about, you know?
So then after visiting with him, you had to come back to the San Luis Valley to kind of regroup and reassess, sounds
well,
like.
You know, he always had a big impact on me. But at times, I mean, he could be cynical and sarcastic. Let me tell you, okay, we're out hiking all day. We go into the Outback Pizza.
Oh, good place.
Place is packed. There's a guitar sitting on the corner. All of a sudden, he just gets up, grabs the guitar, starts singing these canciones in Spanish. You know, all these, the locals, they didn't even blink an eye. You could tell who the tourists were because they're all like, who is this guy? I'm sitting there going, oh my God, you know, Dassey, this guy just jumps up in the middle of the restaurant and starts singing songs. He sets down the guitars. I'm chuckling. I'm like, dude, you cracked me up. He's like, hey, life is short. You got to have some fun. You know, so that was one aspect of him. The next minute, he'd be like, you know, Christmas sucks. It's a contrived American consumerism. He's like, you know, Black Friday, shop till you drop, fill your shopping cart full of crap. He's like, you know, this, you know, he'd cut down the 4th of July. He'd say, okay, everybody in America, every little burg in America is shooting off explosives into the air, polluting the environment, waving their flags, how great America is. You know, so there's these sides to him, you know, that, you know, and, but he definitely left a big impression on me and I love the guy forever.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So, Jerry, it's really been a joy listening to you talk and give us your wealth of experience and knowledge about mountain biking here in the Valley. Do you have any final words for us before we wrap things up?
Well, let me tell you my feelings about cycling a bit. I think cycling should be the future of America if we really want to save the environment. You know, especially like in a utilitarian thing in the cities or whatever. We should get rid of these cars. I don't know, get an e-bike if you have to. You know, quit polluting. Quit taking up space on the highway. Our roads are overrun. You know, I think cycling is the key. I really do. You know, and I actually believe that cycling, you know, I believe that society would be a happier and healthier place with more vitality if people were to ride bikes. You know, I actually think that if people rode bikes or got out in nature more, ride a bike, go for a hike, whatever, get out in nature, there'd probably be less gun violence in America. You know, I really believe that. And so, you know, and I would say, you know, if you haven't been out to some of these places in the Valley, like the Stone Quarry or Penitente Canyon, live here in the Valley, these are unique places. Go out there, enjoy, you know, find them.
You know, well, you're speaking to the choir here, and you're speaking to the choir for the folks who listen to this podcast.
Let me
believe in being outdoors.
Let me leave you with a John Nichols quote so people can ponder this, okay?
Okay.
Because this is something that I feel all the time. We are touched by magic wands. For just a brief fraction of our day, life is perfect. And we are happy and in harmony with the earth. The feeling passes much too quickly, but the memory and anticipation of other miracles sustains us in the battle indefinitely. That's John Nichols.
And that's Jerry Duran, folks. Race director, mountain bike builder, race bike builder, road bike builder, utilitarian bike builder, just an all-around bicycling enthusiast, very knowledgeable. Jerry, it's been a real pleasure having you on. Thanks for coming on to The Citizen.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. And we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. You're listening to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Hannah Eubanks with a Valley Calendar update. Here are the events you can look forward to this week. Monday this week in Alamosa, there will be a Veterans Day appreciation event starting at 11 a.m. at 8955 Independence Way. All day Tuesday, veterans, active duty, and National Guard members are invited to enjoy Colorado's state parks for free. Also on Tuesday, South Conejo School is hosting a Veterans Day celebration starting at 10:30 a.m. On Saturday this week, there are a whole host of events. The Alamosa Senior Center is hosting a Christmas bazaar from 8 to 2. Spadefoot Story Slam will meet at 6 p.m. at the Narrow Gauge Book Co-op. This month's Story Slam theme is traditions. And for the music lovers, ASU is hosting a guest piano recital at Leon Memorial Hall starting at 7 p.m. And there's also a Hogan and Moss and the Old Weird America concert at Society Hall starting at 7. You can find details for these events and more at alamosacitizen.com. If you have an event coming up, submit it to the Valley Calendar. Head to the Valley Calendar page on alamosacitizen.com, click online form, and give us the details. That'll do for now. Have a great week. It's been a tough year for many folks in Monta Vista. As the holidays approach, a lot of us are feeling tired or anxious, but good things are still happening all around us. This year alone, the Lohr Foundation has partnered with your friends and neighbors to bring more than 75 community-driven projects to life, making things a little brighter here at home. Lohr funds ideas designed and led by Monta Vista locals of all ages, no nonprofit experience required. Whether it's helping neighbors save time or money, supporting families, or creating something that brings people together, your ideas can make a real impact. All it takes to get started is a simple conversation. And once your idea is approved, most projects receive funding within 30 days. So let's close out the year stronger together. Visit lohrfoundation.org or email yvette@lohrfoundation.org to learn more.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. The higher elevations of the San Juan Mountains should see 8 to 10 inches of snow the weekend of November 14th to 15th. The Wolf Creek ski area will be the main benefactor. San Luis Valley itself could see some rain mixed with snow, but nothing that would suggest an arrival of winter. Instead, fall temperatures are expected to remain above normal for the season. We'll note that Alamosa set new daytime record high temperatures of 70 degrees and 68 degrees on November 3rd and 4th, respectively. And now for some news. A female gray wolf, number 2506, was found dead in southwest Colorado on October 30th, according to Colorado Parks and Wildlife. A mortality signal was sent that day, and biologists were able to confirm the dead animal. There's been no word on the cause of death or the specific location where the wolf was found. Due to gray wolves being a federally endangered species, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will conduct the necropsy on the wolf and release information once it has completed the investigation. Wolf 2506 was one of the 15 wolves from British Columbia. This marks the sixth wolf death this year in Colorado. As reported in the previous episode of The Outdoor Citizen, the Trump administration could further complicate the next round of wolf introductions after U.S. Fish and Wildlife Director Brian Nesvik sent a letter to CPW Director Jeff Davis notifying him that CPW must source wolves from the northern Rocky Mountain states, not from Canada. Colorado Governor Jared Polis recently spoke with Washington Governor Bob Ferguson about acquiring wolves from the state of Washington. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife will address it at their commission meeting this week. CBW is investigating a reported moose attack west of Jamestown in Boulder County around 1 p.m. on November 5th. A woman was walking her dog off-leash near her home when a young bull moose knocked her to the ground, stomping her multiple times. The woman was taken to a nearby hospital with head and back injuries. CPW officers responded to the area, but officers were not able to locate the moose. Signs warning of aggressive moose behavior have been placed near the scene. A majority of reported moose attacks involve dogs, as moose view them as predators or potential threats. Pets should be kept on a leash when recreating outdoors, especially near riparian habitats where moose prefer to live. And we do have moose here in the San Luis Valley. So this is pertinent to us, not just to folks in the Boulder and North Park area. Moose should be given ample space and not approached when encountered. They are large and very fast, able to run up to 35 miles per hour. Use rocks, trees, or vehicles as barriers between people and moose if spotted while recreating outdoors. Now a look at some upcoming outdoor events. The San Juan Nordic Club invites you to the Fall Social at the Colorado Farm Brewery, Friday, November 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. to reconnect with our ski buddies, learn where the trails are, get involved, and meet new people that love to play in the snow. For more information, call 719-480-1820. The San Juan Nordic Club Ski Swap is set for Saturday, December 6th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the SLV Gen Wild Gear Library. That's located at 518 San Juan Avenue in Alamosa. Enter through the garage door on the south side. You can drop off equipment and outdoor clothing Friday, December 5th from 1 to 5 p.m. and Saturday, December 6th from 9 to 10 a.m. It's $1 to register an item, and 10% of the sales goes to the San Juan Nordic Club. This joint effort will also be an outdoor clothes drive for the gear library. Ski and outdoor gear swap donations are currently being accepted. You can get more information by sending an email to sanjuannordic@gmail.com, or you can reach them by calling 719-480-3141. The San Juan Nordic Club is also hosting the Winter Wildland Alliance's Backcountry Film Festival on December the 12th at the Monte Vista Church Project to promote winter recreation and raise funds for grooming efforts. Doors open at the Church Project, 256 South Broadway Street in Monte Vista, at 5:30 p.m. The films will start at 6 p.m., and there will be an intermission at 7 p.m. You can get tickets at the link in the San Luis Valley Outdoor Report on alamosacitizen.com. The Rio Frio Ice Fest is almost upon us. Boy, you know, Owen, this is a time when there's actually water in the river.
You know, Chris and I were just talking about that. It might be a good racetrack this year.
Oh, yeah. If we can just get some cold temperatures now. I have noticed that walking out at the riparian park in the last week, early in the morning, like 7 o'clock, in the little backwater eddies, there's a thin sheet of ice starting to form at that time. It's gone by the afternoon, but you know, the water's cooling down.
Yeah, it's looking good out there. It's been nice. It's been a nice reprieve.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so let's get back to the race itself. So the Rio Frio kicks off 10 a.m. on Saturday, January 24th, 2026. This spectacular 5K race is conducted entirely on the frozen Rio Grande. As long as it's frozen, it's pretty cool. It's a chip-timed race. Race bibs, chips, and swag bags are available for pickup from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kneeknockers Bar and Grill on Friday, January 23rd, 2026, and from 8 to 9:30 a.m. at the Alamosa Senior Citizen Center the day of the race. If you have any questions about the race, please contact the race director at dcarleo, that's D-C-A-R-L-E-O, at alamosa.gov. To learn more, go to rioraces.com. And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is produced by Owen Woods, published by alamosacitizen.com. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcasts. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear about in a future episode, please send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. And we want to thank you for listening and tuning in to the Outdoor Citizen podcast. Marty Jones saying goodbye, and we'll see you outside.